Good afternoon and welcome to this Overdrive on Friday. Hope you're enjoying the beautiful day wherever you are in Toronto or environs or watching on television. I'm Gord Miller sitting with Steve Simmons for the regular crew. We have a lot to get to today, a lot to talk about. There's a ton going on in sports. The NHL draft is tonight. Mississauga's Owen Power is expected to be taken first overall. But this is Mail It In Friday in Overdrive, brought to you by Coors Light, Mountain Cold Refreshment, made to chill, as is Steve Simmons, made to chill.
You know, when the pandemic started and everybody went home in March of 2020 or however it was.
Or March of 1920, whatever it feels like.
Yeah, it seems like 100 years ago. Suddenly, between 4 and 7, I knew what I was doing every single day of the week. In my house, the television went on, or the radio went on, and Overdrive was on. And so I'd be getting dinner ready, or getting stuff done, or writing, or whatever it was I was doing that day, accompanied by Brian Hayes and company.
So what I try to always figure out when I would... So Ray Ferraro and I would often be driving to a rink, or going to a rink, or at the rink at 5 o'clock Eastern time when he would do his hits for Overdrive.
Yeah.
So I could only hear half of the show, his half. And I would always try to figure out what they were talking about. Like, what on earth would be the question that he would be answering that to?
Well, the funny thing about that is when my wife comes home from work, and she's been going out to work throughout the entire pandemic.
Right.
When she comes home, Ray was off and on. And it was like, okay, you can't talk to me now. Ray's on. There's no hello. There's no anything. And she turns to me one day and she says, you like Brian Hayes more than you like me. And your point is?
Yeah, exactly. My daughter, by the way, is very excited about today's show. My daughter, Blair, is very excited because we're doing mean tweets today. Now, she's funny because... She can, you know, she's a 16-year-old girl. She can be hard on me. She can be tough.
16-year-old girl? I'm surprised your hair looks as dark
as it is. Let's be honest. It's not a gender thing. 16-year-olds, period.
Yes, but...
She can be hard on her dad, and she enjoys it. But when other people are hard on me, she doesn't normally like it, but she loves mean tweets.
Okay, well...
So she...
You know what? They're funny. When late-night television does them... Whichever talk show it happens to be, they're funny.
Well, the Robert De Niro ones.
Yeah.
Where someone says, you know, why doesn't Robert De Niro retire? And he goes, why don't you bleep and bleep off?
Yeah.
So we'll do that at 6:25 still to come on the show. We'll talk to Keith Olbermann. The Blue Jays are playing the Mets tonight. Keith is a gigantic Mets fan. He'll have lots of opinions about all kinds of other stuff, including the Cleveland Indians changing their name. They're now the Cleveland Guardians. Now, for those who haven't been to Cleveland, and by the way...
Where does Guardians come from?
Well, here's where it comes from. There are 8 statues in Cleveland on the bridges that are guardians of the city. There are these giant statues on the bridges, stone carvings. They're the guardians of the city.
You know, I've been to Cleveland, I can't tell you how many times, and I've never seen the statue.
And Cleveland, by the way, gets a bad rap.
Oh, downtown Cleveland.
Cleveland and Pittsburgh, great cities, downtown's night, like, they get a bad rap. So we'll talk about that. The ongoing debate in the NFL about vaccinations. The Minnesota Vikings fired longtime assistant coach Rick Dennison today for refusing to get vaccinated.
You know, the NFL can tell you how high you wear your socks. They can mandate what you do with your knee pads. They can,
you know, how you tuck your jersey.
What you write on your shoes. So the very fact that they're telling you that you must be vaccinated. Small potatoes compared to the other things they tell you all the time.
And we'll talk more about the Jays in a little bit. We're going to talk to Cammy Granato, speaking of Ray Ferraro.
What an exciting time that must be.
His better half. It's funny, I was there for dinner like a week ago, I guess it was. I was in Vancouver. And Cammy, I do most of her scouting this year by video. Because, of course, you couldn't be in the rinks. So she, every time Ray would walk by, she'd close her laptop. Like every time.
Privacy.
She closed her laptop. Hey, listen, Cammy, let me tell you something. Like, she's a vault. Cammy is a vault.
That will make her a bad scout then.
Yes.
Because the best scouts I know, and probably you know,
she's not blabby.
No, they love to talk.
We'll talk to Carlo Colaiacovo, host of First Up, about tonight's draft. There's some Toronto connections to that. And we'll talk to Dave Naylor just after 6 o'clock about the upcoming CFL season and what's going on in the NFL. But I want to start with the Olympics. The opening ceremony was today. You've been to how many Olympics?
17.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody in this country has been to more.
Kerry Jones.
No, he's less. I think he's really? One less.
Okay, one less. Okay, great humble brag there.
Yes.
I'm 8, so I'm inferior.
Okay.
So you love the opening ceremony.
Normally. Okay. Normally.
What did you think today?
I thought it was made me sad watching. It made me sad without people in the stands, without any feel of welcoming, any excitement. You saw some excitement from the athletes in some countries, but for the most part, it was it left me sort of very, you know, it left me feeling like I'm glad that for athletes that they're able to do this and compete in some kind of games after it was canceled a year ago, but part of the Olympics is all of the things about it.
Sure.
And that means a full crowd, and that means understanding the country and learning the culture and getting out in the city and the village experience for the athletes. And so much of that is taken away in these games. And so if this is a one-time games for you as an athlete, you're getting cheated, unfortunately, this time.
And it is, for the vast majority of athletes, a one-time thing. It is. And I think the other thing that isn't completely understood is, I remember flying home from Rio. I came home before the end of the games, and Penny Oleksiak was on my flight. You know, because swimming was over. She went back.
She went back to carry the flag.
She went back.
Yeah.
But very few athletes march in both the opening and closing. Well, not very few, but not all athletes march in the opening and closing.
Well, normally, say there's 370 Canadian athletes.
Okay.
And a lot of the times, except for maybe track and field, which starts in the second week of the game.
So a lot of the track athletes aren't there yet.
But they're in the country usually training somewhere else.
Yeah.
That's you. But especially this time, because they can't be together.
Yeah.
And what happens with the high-end track athletes is they don't live in the village anyhow. They get their hotels in their own private settings. But what happens so often is as many athletes as can, as long as you're not competing that next day, virtually every athlete that's there will walk in the opening ceremony. There's a great pride to it. There's a national pride. There's a feeling to it. And to see 30
out of
370.
Even if you don't march in the opening ceremony, you'll march in the closing.
Yeah.
Like almost all of them will march in at least one of them.
But you'll probably see under normal circumstance, if it's 370 athletes that are there, or say 350 are there or 370, I'll bet you 320 of them march in the opening,
and
another 250 march in the closing, and to see 30?
Right.
And the Americans sent a lot. Like, the Americans had a lot of people in their group, which you would expect them being the Americans and all.
So think about it, Steve. How many medals will Canada win at the Olympics? How many medal winners will Canada have?
Well, I think they're going to be in that 18 to 20 range.
So 18 to 20. So, and I think, listen, being an Olympian is an extraordinary accomplishment and one to be very proud of. And I've always felt that the Olympics are special for Olympians. There's no pot of gold at the end of the rainbow for most of them. Even if they win a gold medal, it's not going to make them super rich. I don't think Rosie McLennan is living in a mansion based on her gold medal wins. But I think that to be an Olympian and to be in that ceremony is a big thrill. If you ask an athlete, the vast majority of athletes who compete for Canada at the Olympics that don't win a medal, what was the highlight for you? Competing and being in one of those ceremonies.
Well, I've covered live opening ceremonies, which is a very difficult thing, by the way, to cover, because you can't go down on the field and you can't, you know, so you have to be clever in finding ways to sort of do it. And, you know, as cell phones have gotten better and better, now you get a person's number and you can talk to them as they're walking in and you get...
And they're FaceTiming.
Yeah, you're getting all kinds of great stuff that way. What I did at one Olympics is I found an athlete whose parents, and I went and sat with them. And I wrote the opening ceremonies through a parent's eyes of, you know, taking their kids to practices and all the things that go into becoming an Olympian.
Yeah.
And it was amazing to watch the family and the extended family and all the people who were there watching their daughter walk into the opening ceremony. And the emotion of that was spectacular.
And you know, I think the point you make, too, about for the families to see your child, you know, walking...
Well, it's never about one person.
No.
I mean, you saw that today with the Canadian flag bearer, the basketball player.
Yeah.
Like her family, they had the group out in London, Ontario, and they were, you know, all excited about it. And often that happens more you know, as you see, you won't see it because it doesn't get on television, but that happens all across the country for every family and every person. And you're going to see it tonight with the NHL draft. You know, that's one of the great scenes, that hug with mom.
So you're 17 Olympics?
Yeah.
Have you gone to the opening ceremony every time?
No, I didn't go to Los Angeles.
That was a good one, wasn't it?
Yes.
Wasn't that the guy in like the jetpack and everything?
I don't know. I went to the closing in Los Angeles. We got Lionel Richie. That was pretty good.
So I got to confess, this is a terrible thing to say. I've been to one. I went to Vancouver. Because I kind of thought I had to.
And you did.
It doesn't do a lot for me. Like I like the closing ceremony better than the opening ceremony. It gets long for me.
Yeah.
And of course, we're C, right? So, I mean, like we're usually, you know, like we're in, then you're, you know, like.
I don't like all of the, I hate to say that, the dance stuff and the
cultural representation.
Yeah, the cultural representation.
This is who we are.
Yes, and the
London one, I watched it. It's funny, so in London.
We saw Paul McCartney. That's a little different.
Well, it was great in London because it was really hard to get a reservation in a good restaurant during the Olympics in London, except for the night of the opening ceremony because everyone was either at the thing or watching it on TV. Yes. So we went to a beautiful restaurant with a patio, and it was on TV, and we could see the stadium in the distance, saw the fireworks. I got to be honest. It's just I recognize that it's a big thrill for the athletes and everything else. I'm just not big on, I don't know.
The closing
ceremony is fun because you see all the medal winners and you know.
I love the parade of athletes. And I love to see each of the countries. The countries are so different. And to see each of them come in their uniforms, whatever they're wearing that time, and to see the excitement on their kids. To see the excitement on these kids' faces. And, you know, their countries, honestly, you would not know that they even exist. There were countries today I hadn't even heard of. And they were walking in, and you're thinking, you know, here they are with four or six Olympians. What an accomplishment that is for one of these tiny little countries that you don't even know.
So for Salt Lake City in 2002, Bob McKenzie and I flew to Salt Lake the day of the opening ceremony. So we were actually arriving that night. We had to wait in Denver to connect, and all the airspace was shut down because Air Force One was in. So planes couldn't fly into Salt Lake until Air Force One left. So we're in the airport, we're in the United Airlines lounge, and the opening ceremony's on. So there's a bunch, it's packed, right? And so Canada comes in, there's a whole bunch of Canadians, like, hey, Canada. And then there's a guy standing at the bar with like a 10-gallon hat, the dinner plate belt buckle, the cowboy boots on, and a flag comes in with a blue square with a star in it, and a white bar and a red bar. And he goes, all right, yeah. And the announcer goes, Chile. And he goes, oh, I thought that was us. And Bob says, that guy thinks Texas is a country. He thinks Texas is going to walk in the Parade of Nations. So I start to laugh, and the guy says to Bob, what's he laughing at? And Bob, never shy to start, so he goes, you! He's laughing at you! To this giant guy. But it is, I have generally booked my flights to arrive. And I don't take the Olympics for granted. I didn't watch this morning. I had other stuff to do. It just doesn't.
I don't know what it is about.
I feel bad saying it, because I sit there and watch it, and it's like, after a while, it's like, okay.
Yeah,
there's a lot of speeches, and you know.
Yeah, I could have done without Bach's long speech today. I mean, I think he took the entire pandemic to write it, like
and to deliver it.
but what I find it, I don't know if I'm feeling it as much now, not being there. But boy, do I look forward to watching the Olympics.
I love watching them.
And I find I get excited about things that I've never been excited about before and wouldn't care about in any way at all.
Isn't that the beauty of the Olympics?
My old friend Dave Perkins said something great. He says, give me 15 minutes and I can become an expert in any sport.
Well, I think that, you know, hey, listen, so I've done the Olympics for NBC, and people criticize them for the way they do it, holding stuff into prime time. But the fact is, it's enormously successful. It's a huge rating success. It's an enormous. NBC is a huge financial success with their Olympics because, A, instead of running events at 3 o'clock in the morning, but they also boil it down. They say, here's this athlete, Steve Simmons. He works at an auto plant in Detroit and is also a shot putter. And they tell you his story, and then they show you his event. So it's a little reality show almost.
Yeah, and they don't show who's second or third or fourth. They show him.
Well, no, I mean...
No, sometimes they do that.
Well, you know what? I don't buy that. I mean, we focused... I mean,
it's like watching a golf tournament and they show Tiger Woods.
But I've done domestic Olympics for Canadian TV a lot, and we focus just as much on Canadian athletes as the Americans do on American athletes. Like we show the Canadian finishes 15th and kind of gloss over the medal winners sometimes. So, I mean, I wouldn't completely let them off. Are they? They got more medal winners than we do.
One of the things I find fascinating right now is the only reason there is an Olympics is because of NBC, because of the money.
Well,
and the involvement right now. Television is buying these games and paying for these games.
I would not disagree with that. I would not. And
because there was a real possibility that they weren't going to come off.
Yeah, and if they didn't come off this year, they weren't going to happen.
No.
So the cancellation of the games would be a financial... Well, let's be honest, Steve. Let's not put too fine a point on it. The reason the NHL played in a bubble last year was TV money.
Oh.
Let's be honest. I mean,
why is the NFL right now, you know, making sure everyone's vaccinated? Money.
Money.
They can't afford to have games canceled.
Right, and only two events that I know of, sporting events that I know of, had pandemic insurance. Wimbledon and the World Hockey Championship, the IHF World Hockey Championship. Beyond that, and the Shaw Festival, as a cultural event, had it. Very few events have it. To refund the corporate partners all their money, to refund the broadcast partners all their money, unthinkable. And so, I mean, I'm glad sports was played through the pandemic. I'm glad that, you know, they came off for the most part pretty well. But let's not kid ourselves why they happened.
I know you're a guy who likes to read a lot. And I think one of the things that I say before every Olympics, it's like a book you've never read.
Yeah.
You open it, you don't know what's going to pull you in, you don't know which characters you're going to meet. Did we know Penny Oleksiak's name four years ago? No, I remember the first time I heard it. I had called the woman who was in charge with on the podium, and I said, you know, tell me about our Olympic team.
Right.
And she says, we have a girl, she's 4 years away, she's going to be sensational. It was Penny Oleksiak. Turns out she was 4 days away.
4 days away. So, yeah and so I think, I've been very fortunate to call a lot of great sporting events and go to great sporting events, you know, obviously hockey and World Cup, two World Cups of soccer, you name it. I think one of the most extraordinary nights I've had in sport was in 2012 at the London Olympics, the night that Jessica Ennis, Greg Rutherford, and Mo Farah won gold medals for Great Britain in 40 minutes.
That was a spectacular night.
I mean, you're in this stadium with over 100,000 people, and their country wins three gold medals in, it was like 38 minutes. I mean, it was, the place, I had a bottle of water in front of me, and we had, obviously our broadcast position was extraordinary, but it was vibrating on the counter. I mean, I agree with you, and these are not sports. I mean, to be honest with you, if you took the field for the men's 100 meters and put that in a stadium in Toronto, not for the Olympics, how many people would show up?
If Andre de Grasse was running, they probably would get a reasonable crowd. If anyone
not 80,000.
What?
Not 80,000.
Oh, no. Nowhere close. They would get a Blue Jays crowd from next week, which is what, 15,000?
Yeah, so it is because the Olympics, I agree with you. It's all how you view it, and I think I love the dedication of these athletes. I'm fortunate that Marnie McBean is a neighbor of mine and a friend. And, you know, Marnie exemplifies what the Olympics are about. And I always think about, you know, she won that gold medal in Atlanta, and it was such a great moment for her, and she'd been through so much. And then that night, Donovan Bailey won the men's 100 meters, and she got, you know. But, I mean, that's the Olympics.
And Saturday night and the next Saturday night, when Donovan wins the 100 and then the Canadians upset with the 4x100 gold medal, are two of the most memorable nights of my career. Like, just absolutely spectacular moments that you'll never forget.
So, speaking of things you'll never forget, this show today, I think, will be unforgettable. We got Cammy Granato coming up. We got Carlo Colaiacovo. We got Keith Olbermann.
Yes, very nice. Your friend. Okay.
Well, we've known each other a long time.
You know, I don't believe I've ever met Keith Olbermann. If I have, I can't recall, but I don't.
You'd hear him before you saw him.
Maybe.
Dave Naylor will join us.
Now there's a friend.
Yeah. And mean tweets. So we should point this out, because our mentions are both closed on Twitter, so we don't. So please, you know, if you think you're going to start sending savage stuff now, the grappler's already picked the mean tweets. So you're just yelling into a vacuum.
And I've read them. They don't seem that mean, you know.
Really? I haven't looked at them yet. I'm busy. I got a lot to do in this show.
They haven't seem that mean to me, but I'm so used to it.
When we come back, I want to get more into the Cleveland Indians today and what that might mean for other teams in pro sports and their names and their logos. That's all coming up on Overdrive on TSN 1050, on TSN.ca, the TSN app, and your home speakers. Just after 4:25 for the afternoon this Friday. Did they get time checks on the radio anymore? Is that necessary? Everyone's got a clock in their car, I guess, huh? Baseball announcers used to have an egg timer.
To give the score.
Give the score. Yep. Make sure you gave the score every...
Jerry Howarth always used that egg timer when he was doing Blue Jay games.
Jerry was awesome. He was, I got to say, he was so helpful to me when I was a young baseball broadcaster starting out. He was so kind to me. He and Tom are great. They were so generous and
well, nothing's worse than being in your car and listening to an inning of baseball or any sport for that matter, but it seems like it happens more in baseball than any other one. And then the inning ends, and you don't know the score.
It is kind of it is the biggest thing in the sport. So speaking of baseball, news today, as we mentioned earlier, the Cleveland Indians have announced their name is changing to the Cleveland Guardians. Now, this is a long-standing discussion with Cleveland. They got rid of the caricature indigenous person on their hats. They got rid of Chief Wahoo, the mascot. But they finally announced they have changed the name. So... this comes after, you know, the Washington football team, I've never been comfortable saying the word that they used to be called.
Yes.
It to me is a slur. That one to me is an out and out slur. It's as bad as any, you would never in a million years say that word to an indigenous person. You would never call them that.
Well, like everything else, what was acceptable in 1920 isn't acceptable in 2021.
So what do you think of the name change?
I don't love the name Guardians, but until you told me about the history and the statues and all that, I now understand it to a point. I'm a touch of a simpleton on this. I love the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I've been to it. I can't tell you how many times. I would have loved to have seen Cleveland Rocks.
Yeah. The thing about names for me is, like, let's be honest, Maple Leafs is kind of a weird name.
Well, remember when Blue Jays... were you when the Blue Jays
I was living in Edmonton.
Okay, I was
Well, we all thought it was because the brewery owned the team and had the word blue in it.
Yeah, and at the time, I think I was still in high school or maybe first year university. And we all, nobody said this is a great name. Nobody said Raptors was a great name.
No, I mean, let's be honest. As I said today earlier on Twitter... three Major League Baseball teams literally are named after Sox, right? Boston, Cincinnati, and Chicago. So, I mean, you know, you and I have both been to Utah. Its bustling jazz scene is not what you think of. There's no lakes.
Well, that wasn't in New Orleans jazz, in fairness.
Yeah, and the Minneapolis Lakers moved to L.A. There's no lakes in L.A. There's lots of dumb names. So I guess now by extension comes the next question. And that would be, I think, the next team up, and they've got lots of the Chicago Blackhawks have lots on their plate right now. The allegations that came out yesterday, more details of the alleged sexual abuse that went on by their former video coach are harrowing. In the long term, though, the Blackhawks logo, so I think you need to put this in context in terms of the history of the name and the logo. The team was owned by Major Frederick McLaughlin, who fought with the Black Hawk Regiment in World War I. The regiment was named after Chief Black Hawk of the Sauk tribe, who was a famous warrior in the 1800s. McLaughlin's wife drew the logo. It's not a rendering of Chief Black Hawk. And the rendering has changed a number of times over the years. The Blackhawks have worked with various indigenous communities, including the Sauk, to set up information programs and everything else. That said, I don't believe that in 20 years... Now, and also one other thing, the Blackhawks changed their name. It was a subtle change, but 30 years ago, Blackhawks was two words, capital B, capital H. It's now one word.
Well, I'm saying, when I started covering the NHL, it was two words.
Yeah, so now it's one word, and that's a subtle distinction, but it's an important one, because it's no longer his name. I don't believe in 20 years that will be their logo.
I don't believe in 2 years it will be their logo. Having said that, if I go back 10 or 15 If you had asked me, you can buy one jersey. Mm-hmm. You can buy the best jersey in the NHL. Yeah. What are you buying? I was buying the Blackhawks. I was buying that jersey.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me right now to sit back and say it's wrong. It is wrong. But I never thought it was wrong 20 years ago when I wanted to buy it.
So I think what you'll run into when you get into this discussion is a lot of pushback in terms of, well, you know, it's always been that way. It's traditional. It's a great uniform. You know, it wasn't wrong before. Why is it wrong now? Well, because standards change. And the standard I would use, Steve, is this. If the Cleveland Indians or Chicago Blackhawks were an expansion team, and Cleveland said, yeah, the name of our new baseball team is going to be the Indians, and the Blackhawks said to the league, here's our logo, I think in both cases the answer would be, no, you're not.
Yeah,
the, no. So if a new team couldn't do it, why can an old team? Just because it's been done for a long time? That's the excuse to prolong slavery, child labor, not giving women the vote, segregation. There's all kinds of reasons to say, you know, it's always been that way, it should continue that way. I just don't believe it will. Now, you're going to get into things then like the Kansas City Chiefs, the Atlanta Braves. Now, the Golden State Warriors, their logo is a bridge. A warrior can be anyone.
Can't a Brave be anyone? They've had the bad logo.
They've had the bad logo, and people do the tomahawk chop.
Yeah,
and the same thing in Kansas City. There's an appropriation there. And I think that, especially now, and certainly in this country, I think in the United States as well, there is a reckoning of a great injustice that's been done.
Well, in this country, if you're not aware of it now, then shame on you. Because we've learned things in the past several months that a lot of us didn't know before, and it's horrific what we've learned. And if you're not offended by what you're seeing now,
right,
then maybe check your pulse.
So an interesting one is the Florida State Seminoles. So the Seminole tribe in Florida has actually worked very closely with the university, and the university has scholarships for First Nations kids from that tribe and others. They have education programs at the school. They have classes they offer in Indigenous studies, and the Seminole tribe has worked with the school and on characterization and everything else. So I do think there can be a way to work together. However, I think that's a very specific case.
But depending on how old you are,
yeah,
how you grew up, where you're educated, what you chose to believe in at any time in your life, seeing change can be difficult.
Yep.
Seeing in Toronto here, they're changing the name of Dundas Street.
And right away you're going to get a pushback, you know, I don't like change.
And in, I think it's in Kingston, or maybe it even be Toronto as well, that they're changing school names from John A. McDonald, the first prime minister of the country.
Yeah, and they're changing, I think, the John A. McDonald Parkway in Kingston, I think, is going to change.
And
I think that's
well,
something in
some Kingston. Talk about changing Ryerson University, which used to be Ryerson Polytechnical Institute, which a lot of broadcasters and people who work in our industry in this country have been through in one way or another. And so things that, as we, you know, I applied to Ryerson in 1978 or whatever year it was. There was not a second's thought that there's something wrong with that name.
So that
we didn't even know what the name meant.
Yeah, so it doesn't make, you're right. It doesn't make it right. I'll be honest, my family's of Irish descent, of Irish extraction. I don't love the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, the caricature of a brawling little leprechaun. Like, at least he doesn't have a whiskey in his hand. You know, like, I don't know about that one. I find, you know, like, Canadian Tire Money had that Scottish guy on it. A Scottish friend of mine said, like, what's that all about? Like, what, like, it, you know, that Scottish people are cheap and you can use this to save money. Like,
when I was talking about the Cleveland Indians a year, 2 years, 3 years ago, a friend of mine came up to me and said, what if they call them the Cleveland Jews? Now, I grew up as a Jewish Canadian.
Yeah.
Still am a Jewish Canadian. That was the first time it hit me. Yeah, that's wrong. That's not the name it should be.
So in a subtle way, you know, in my case, I never said the Washington football team's name. For the last 20 years, I just said Washington. Cleveland, I was uncomfortable. Now, the funny thing I get is, you know, oh, you're so woke. Like, that's an insult. Okay, I'm awake and aware of things. I'm not asleep and unaware of things. I don't know that... I do think you're going to run into that rump of people that like things the way they are and don't want to admit that the things they liked might have been wrong.
But doesn't that take us back a little bit to the NFL conversation right now? Because you're sitting in a situation where a coach got fired today because he wouldn't get vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, why do you get vaccinated? And are you doing it for yourself, or you're doing it for someone else? Or you're doing it so your neighborhood is safe? And I think that, that how people choose to think about issues is, you know, what's woke, what's not, what's what's right, what's not. There's so many things to think about in sports today that we never, ever considered before.
Progress is difficult, right? Progress is difficult. And along the line, you know, you think about the images we saw, certainly in the 60s, of, you know, police in the South using fire hoses on civil rights protesters, and black children being escorted into a school, and people screaming. Like, don't be that person in the picture. Don't be that person screaming at kids going into a school, because 20 years later, you're going to feel dumb.
And that's the person in Walmart in British Columbia that's screaming at the person wearing a mask. Like, we've seen so many things in the past year and a half. It's been an eye-opening time.
It's an interesting day, and it's not the end of this conversation, that's for sure. Still more to come on this program. We'll talk to Carlo Koliakovo about tonight's NHL draft. The Leafs don't have a pick until the second round, but Carlo knows a number of the top prospects in this draft. We'll also talk to Dave Naylor, and we'll talk to Keith Olbermann about the Jays playing the Mets tonight. He'll probably talk about the Cleveland name change as well.
And the Mets picked up a pitcher today.
They did. And so we'll talk about that as well. Cammy Granato coming up, our old pal, a scout for the Seattle Kraken. That's all coming up. Cammy Granato is next on TSN Overdrive on TSN 1050, tsn.ca, the TSN app, and your home speakers. Overdrive on TSN 1050, Gord Miller with Steve Simmons. There's lots going on in hockey today. Just breaking now, a trade between the Arizona Coyotes and the Vancouver Canucks. Oliver Ekman-Larsson, the defenseman, Connor Garland, the high-scoring forward, to Vancouver for Louis Erickson, Antoine Roussel, Jay Beagle, and the ninth overall pick in the upcoming draft. So basically, you got to think Arizona buys out Erickson. They get out from under the Ekman-Larsson contract, but this is...
But they get Beagle's money, which is not...
Yeah, but not Ekman-Larsson's money is long and big, so they get out the length of that contract, but... This is a money transaction by Arizona. Also, Rangers send Pavel Buchnevich to St. Louis for Sammy Blais in a second-round pick. And earlier today, this afternoon, Buffalo sent Rasmus Ristolainen, the defenseman, to Philadelphia for Robert Haig, a defenseman, a first-round pick, and a second-round pick. So lots going on. And, of course, all of this comes just two days after the Seattle Kraken made their expansion draft picks, and they'll be in their first NHL draft tonight. And joining us now is Seattle Kraken scout, Olympic gold medalist, Hall of Famer, our friend, Cammy Granato. Cammy, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Gord. Hi, Steve. How you doing?
We're good. This is an extraordinary time. I mean, tell us about going from the expansion draft and the lead-up to the entry draft tonight and tomorrow, and then right into free agency on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's been definitely busy, but a good busy, and a lot of fun to be a part of. I know Ron and management team has been, you know, extremely busy over the last coming days, and it keeps going, right? It keeps going. We break for dinner here and there, and it's an exciting time in Seattle. And I think being at the entry draft or expansion draft, the other night with the crowd and just seeing all the boats in the harbor and actually seeing players, you know, there, it made it so much more real. And all the work that we've done over the last few years, it's really cool to sort of see that we're here now.
So what's it been like for you, for people like Ron Francis or other people at your organization who've been scouting and managing and doing all this for years and years and years? You've played the game, obviously. You've been a great student of the game. What's this process been like, learning the scouting management side that you're now involved with?
It's been incredible, actually. It's been 2 years. The first year was just getting back in the game to know the players. The second year was actually understanding their tendencies and getting a more in-depth look at them. We had a lot of reps, which was good. We did a lot of virtual as well, and we did playoffs, and so we had a lot of of games to get to, and for me personally, just to get reps of scouting and learning how to get reports. We have a great team with incredible feedback, so we were able to like adjust, you know, as necessary. And for me to be a part of something like this, I just never dreamed I could. And so, you know, watching a team build from no players to now, you know, a team of players, it's really rewarding from a scouting perspective and from just a team perspective. And now we've got all the amateur scouts and the pro scouts together, and amateur scouts today are gearing up for the draft, and our management team obviously is still very busy. So there's a lot of buzz and a lot of excitement here in Seattle.
Well, Cammy, there was some criticism, and that's part of the that goes with the territory, right? And you know, your brothers are Donnie Granato, who's now coaching in Buffalo, and your brother Tony's a longtime coach and player. That goes with the territory. What did you make of the reaction to Seattle's expansion draft picks?
What did I make of them? Myself, you mean, Gork?
No, what do you mean? What did you make of the reaction? I mean, it was pretty overwhelming. You know, the people that were there were obviously excited.
Yeah, sure. You know, Ron has a plan, and our management team has a plan, and it's well thought out. And you know, he knows what he's doing, and so I think for us, we're very comfortable with that. And people, you know, might want the big money guy, or might want the name, and I think that you know that's natural. But if there's a plan, and you have a plan, you have to stick with what you're thinking and trust that. And I think, you know, Ron's proven that already in the past, and you know he's a great leader. So we're happy and we're excited, and we don't really listen. I mean, there's criticism at any time nowadays because you got a platform for it. So there's no, you know, you don't really listen to it. It's just noise, right?
So when you're sitting at home and you've got your lists and you've got your computer and you've got your all your draft things and all your scouting things, and privately we all do this, you write down the roster that you think they're going to have. How close were you to the roster that they eventually picked?
Well, we were, as a group, our pro scouting staff, we were competing with each other to who got the right amount of picks.
Was there a pool?
Who got the most. We didn't do a pool, but it was more for ego. And so we had a lot of fun with that one. But it is really fun. Like the day that the protection list came out finally, because we were projecting it for who knows how long. Like a couple years ago, we even did a mock draft, or a year and a half ago, I should say. So when it did come out, we were all buzzing. Like, we all wanted to get to it, like, immediately that morning. Like, I got up early on the West Coast to make sure I could put my picks into the group on our software. And there was just this buzz. You just felt like, oh, my gosh, it's real. You know, this list is now real. It's not a mock draft. It's not a mock protection list. So it was really, really cool. And then we really like to have a lot of fun with each other and who got more, and it's been good. Yeah,
Cammy,
I will not reveal who got more though.
But okay, thank you for that.
Well,
Cammy, you are a vault. I know that. I've known that about you forever. We'll talk about that in a minute. But this has been a challenging year to scout. For you, yeah, as a pro scout, it's been almost all video, right? I mean, I know you've gone to Canuck games, but beyond that, it's been limited. I mean, amateur scouts, the OHL didn't play. The Western League played a limited schedule. Travel was limited. How challenging has scouting been, especially here you are trying to launch a franchise in this environment?
Yeah, I mean, it came with challenges for sure. I think COVID, I think for everybody there was challenges. But for when you're trying to build a team, and it's the last year you have to actually get players in your database, get reps of seeing players and see their tendencies, the good thing is if you've seen a player live and then you do watch video, there is a lot of amazing technology to access that quickly and concisely, so you're not spending hours and hours trying to splice or trying to find player shifts. Like, that was really great and really helpful. The harder part would have been if you couldn't see a player play. They didn't have a lot of games this year. That was tougher. I think also if you hadn't seen a player and you were just watching them for the first time on video, it's a little harder, so you had to get maybe other people, other scouts that had seen them to give you a little bit of a background maybe on their skating or just stuff like that. But it definitely was a positive tool in the end, and we just did the best we could. And I think we're lucky it wasn't 20 years ago without the technology, because that would have been much, much harder.
Right.
Well, tonight is such an important night for your team. It's an important night for every team in the NHL, but yours maybe more so than any other. We've seen year after year after year, teams don't win the Stanley Cup when they don't get a first pick or a second pick or one of those kind of, a Sidney Crosby on their roster or a Victor Hedman or a Stamkos or whomever it is, those are the guys who win year after year after year. How important is this pick tonight for the Kraken?
I mean, it's very important, and it's always, you know, it's always great to be where we are and the number, you know, the pick that we're at, and then the ones to follow. But it's exciting, and it is important, absolutely. But we have a great amateur scouting team. We have, again, great management, and the trust is in them, and I think it's going to be really exciting.
Cammy, I was at the house in Vancouver last week with you guys, having dinner with you and Ray and the kids and the grandkids. It was great. The thing I notice about you, and I've noticed this year, and I noticed last year at the World Junior, you know, you'd have your laptop open. Every time Ray and I walked by, you'd close the laptop. And then last week we're having dinner, we're talking about players, and you kind of shut the conversation down. Like you're shutting us out here.
Yeah, sorry, Gordo. I had to do it. I mean, the nature of your business, I did not want to put you guys in that position to have all these insiders call you for information. So I kept things confidential. Ray was not happy at the beginning, but he certainly understood. And it's something we can joke about now. But I definitely had to be a vault and didn't want to be the one that was giving any information out. So, yeah, now you know, though, Gord, so it's good.
And there's not any...
Now we can talk.
There's not any texts or any private conversations with your brothers?
Well, my brothers are vaults, so I know that. Ray, I'm not saying Ray and Gord aren't vaults, but
Gord's the last thing in the world from a vault.
I didn't say it. You said it.
Okay.
We'll just leave it at that.
Well, Cammy, I mean, I recall when Tony went back to Wisconsin, like, Ray didn't know. I think I saw it on Twitter and told him.
I know.
Like, you didn't tell him. Donnie didn't tell him. No. So it is. Now, I will say, I will.
He was mad at me.
Oh.
He was mad at me for that one. He was mad at me for that one.
He was hot about that. What do you see, Cammy, like, obviously, Seattle's going to be compared to Vegas. I don't think it's fair, but it's natural. They were the last expansion team. They had that extraordinary first year where they went to the final. How much are you guarding against the comparison between your team and what Vegas did?
How much are we comparing, or how much is everyone comparing?
How much are you guarding against those comparisons?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? It's natural. And it's a conversation. It's completely natural for them to think that we would be the same. I mean, we were in a different climate, and also second time around, management on other teams are a little bit, you know, more careful with trading draft picks or careful with making deals. It was like, it was a lot different. I think there was a learning curve, but of course the comparisons are going to be there. And, you know, we think the team looks competitive and so, you know, that's all you can do and go from there. So I think it's more we're focusing on how exciting it is and just what we can control. And you can't really control all the comparisons. And it's just what it is.
I don't tend to buy jerseys. I don't tend to care that own jerseys when you do what we do for a living. But when I saw the S, and I know what my initials are, I'm thinking, that's my jersey now.
Yeah, it's made for you. Yeah, yeah. They're pretty sweet jerseys. Like, seeing them, like...
Do you have one with the Granada on the back?
No. Ron had one the other day that he walked out with, and they're hard to come by at this moment, but we were all just so impressed with how crisp and how clean it looked. The colors, the color combination is really a beautiful jersey. So
I got to say, Cammy,
I think the guys like it too.
I got to say, Cammy, seeing you had the zippy top on the night we had dinner, and that's like, you know, size large, you know the address.
yeah.
I got the Christmas card. How excited are you for the next step, to actually see players? Like, there'll be development camp pretty soon for your group.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be training camp. You've gone from having no players essentially last week to you're going to have guys on the ice in the next couple of weeks. How exciting is that for you?
It's incredibly exciting. I think, you know, just the other night, having the six guys that were at the expansion draft, just seeing them in the flesh was just like, it was just so cool that, like, you know, the guys that we looked at all year, the guys that we scouted all year, and some of them are sitting here, and it's really cool. And the fact that they got to come in and be together and like spend a couple of days together and see the city too, that gives a nice jump start to when they come back in. So it's been really amazing, and something that you don't, you know, it's on the schedule, like you can see it in the horizon, but it seems so far away, and now that it's here, it's really, really cool. And we toured that arena the other day, and it was just stunning. So there's a lot done right here, and I'm super excited to be a part of it. I can't wait for the team to get on the ice.
Cammy, thanks for talking to us. As I always say to you when I leave you, there's a place in heaven for you.
Oh, Gordo, thanks.
and you know why I say that.
I know what you're saying. Oh, I know.
Thanks, Cammy.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, that's Cammy Granato. Still ahead, we'll talk with Carlo Koliakovo about the draft. We've got Keith Olbermann coming up, and Mean Tweets, too, coming up on Overdrive on TSN 1050, streaming on the TSN app, on tsn.ca, and on your home speakers.